Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, looking forward to a packed midweek of Euro action, Champions League, Europa League, all the Euro leagues in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. These are the pundits. Gli esperti, di esperten, les hommes de la gauche, the pundits. That's right, listener. It's James Horncastle.
Hello.
Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
All here for a huge show. Champions League, Europa League, other stuff too. An amazing Mkhitaryan song. Maybe if we've got time, we could talk about what Zlatan did at the weekend. All sorts of stuff. Jules, what are the headlines in France?
There will have to be Neymar playing again for PSG for the first time in 126 days, being insulted and booed and jeered, and then scoring an incredible winner in the last minute, 92nd minute.
What a story. Alvaro, over in Spain, Atletico Madrid losing.
Atletico losing. Martin Odegaard was one of the players who was punishing Atletico de Madrid. Then Sevilla tops the table with Julen Lopetegui as a manager. Right. And Barcelona's Ansu Fati is proving that 7 minutes are enough to become a star, or at least to become someone who raises the passion at Barcelona Camp Nou.
Right, that gets comparisons with Messi. At 16. Incredible. We're talking about Fati very, very shortly. James, Juve are off the top of the table for the first time in 553 days.
And Inter atop. Perfect record so far. Bad few days for Juventus. This morning, we've seen police round up 12 Capi Ultras who have been accused of extorting the club. And Roma scored 4 goals in half an hour.
And Raphael Honigstein, who's suffering with a bad back today, by the way, listener. Thanks for being with us anyway, Rafa. Dortmund are back.
Dortmund are back. They registered a really convincing 4-0 win over Leverkusen. Could have gone slightly differently because Leverkusen did have chances. But as it was, a resounding scoreline and a sense that they were the real beneficiaries of the other result at the top of the table, which was Bayern only, in inverted commas, drawing 1-1 away to Leipzig.
Certainly. Champions League, that's where we start after this with Dortmund-Barcelona.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
De Jong gira dentro del área, busca el pase, Ansu Fati, gol, 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 gol. Este chico tiene ángel.
Ansu Fati, they're scoring in Barcelona's 5-2 win at the weekend over Valencia, and dominating the headlines the next day. Dressed as Messi, as Sport put it, the 16-year-old kid who's setting records. And there doesn't seem to be any limit to the kind of expectations people have of him. Ahead of the clash with Dortmund, Alvaro, how good is Fati, first of all?
Well, it's difficult to say because I remember that 11 years ago we had the same conversation with Bojan Krkić. And I remember that he also was a record holder for Barcelona in terms of precocity and all that. And then he never managed to stay in the club and to become a star at Barcelona. I can say about Ansu Fati that he is a player that he seems to be daring, which is very important if you play for Barcelona. He seems that the Barcelona shirt is not very heavy on him, in the sense that he plays very lightly, he attacks the ball as if it was the last one, and it was very, very good to see that in 7 minutes he managed to wrap up the game himself, first of all, because in the second minute he scored the goal after he was set up, and he had a very cool finish in the from the penalty spot, and then in the seventh minute he got the ball in the box, he managed to dribble past Garay, I think that he was, and then he set up Frenkie de Jong for the Dutchman to score his first goal as a Barcelona player.
De Jong also had a pretty special game, 54 passes attempted, all of which he completed, and as you mentioned, the goal. But Fati, people were saying his performance was Messi-esque, which It sounds a bit ridiculous, but the way he played, I mean, it was reminiscent of the way he kind of surfs off the defenders.
I think so. And I think that the first three balls that he touched in the game were decisive, which tells you a lot about his verticality and how eager he is to make an impression. I mean, I don't know how much football is going to play when Messi is back and when Ousmane Dembélé is back. Luis Suarez is back finally, he scored the brace against Valencia. But he's not only promising, but also he proves that Barcelona Academy has many good players as well. This summer, Simons left to PSG and it seemed to be like a little bit of a tragedy. La Masia, Barcelona Academy keeps on losing players, but there are still some good talents in there. And now the question is who is he going to play for internationally, because the Spanish FA wants to cap Ansu Fati as soon as they can. He can also play for Guinea-Bissau. He can also play for Portugal. So the question is who he's going to choose to play for. A little bit like Adnan Januzaj, like 7-8 years ago when he could play for multiple countries. But or Declan Rice as well. But I think that Ansu Fati hasn't said anything strange in social media about Spain in the past. So.
Fair, fair.
There's a moment in the game where he controls the ball on his thigh and then makes a sombrero on Daniel Vaz, Daniel Vaz is a good player, he's an experienced player, but he was just left humiliated by a 16-year-old who's quite scary, and it's quite refreshing to see someone like that playing in that kind of way at that age.
And also I would like to say that lately Barcelona has won the games little by little, has cooked the games slowly with players over 30 years old up front, Luis Suarez, Lionel Messi, and little by little they were like a diesel engine, but they managed to win La Liga games. And the other day was just the opposite. Barcelona went straight for the opponent, for Valencia,
right.
Ansu Fati playing on the left. They fried it very quickly, and Carles Pérez on the right, another academy player, and they had so much intensity. They were getting the ball back so quickly as soon as Valencia had the possession. And this is something that Barcelona needed as well, because they were lacking vitality at some point and they were lacking youth in some key places on the pitch. And I think that Ansu Fati, Carles Pérez can bring that in the pitch.
Will these guys play in the Champions League? Or will they have to make way for the more experienced players?
Also, because the news today is that Messi will be available. Luis Suarez, as you say, able to score from standstill on the weekend, but he is available and Messi now fit as well.
I believe that one of them, either Carles Pérez or Ansu Fati, will be playing. Probably Luis Suarez will be starting. Against Valencia, he didn't start, but he came from the bench and he scored 2 goals. So he's kind of ready to play already. But I think that either Ansu Fati, which I believe that he will be the main candidate to start, or Carles Pérez will be starting. And if he scores, Ansu Fati, he will become the youngest ever Champions League scorer, overtaking Peter Ofori Kwaye, who scored the goal in Champions League at the age of 17 years.
If he scores, because the last Spanish team to go to Signal Iduna Park got beaten 4-0, wasn't it? Atletico Madrid last season?
Yeah, it was a surprising result, really.
Dortmund coming off a whopping result this weekend as
yes,
well. Another 4-0.
Another 4-0, yeah.
Auf Jadon Sancho in Rechtsaußenposition. Sancho bringt den Ball in die Mitte, der lässt durch!
Yeah!
Und dann ist da das 2-0 für den BVB, Marco Reus!
They were very convincing. They played really good football. They kept the clean sheet for once. They didn't go behind for once. Those two things usually go together, of course. And they were so effective on the break. I mean, Dortmund, given space, are one of the best teams in European football, especially on the right, where you have Royce often drifting into those areas, combining with Jadon Sancho, who had another wonderful game. And Paco Alcácer, really sharp and much more mobile than he was in some stages towards last season. So it was a complete performance, and it was an important one, because not only was this seen as a real test, you could Leverkusen are probably the fourth best team in the league at the moment, but also they had 2 weeks to sort of stew in their own doubts after losing away to Union Berlin, after a big story in Sportbild saying that there are serious doubts about Lucien Favre's management, that he didn't sign up to the signing of Hummels and Schultz, and that, you know, people are not really sure about him. You might say that the story was perhaps slightly over-egged, but there is a genuine gist of it, which is that last year when they did have that bad second half of the season, there were people in the board, and, you know, still the same people in the board now, who thought maybe his very soft-spoken manner, his very sort of even approach to all team talks, never really changes, never goes up and down, was a contributing factor to Dortmund sort of losing that bit of focus and losing their way. It's, of course, very difficult to say that a different Favre would have done differently things differently, because they only got into that position in the first place because of the work he does in his very specific ways. But it was important, I think, that he showed to himself and to the team that you don't necessarily now have to do things very differently and still can be very successful.
Can they follow that up with a win over Barca, especially given Barcelona's rotten record on the road in this competition?
I don't see why not, because Barcelona should be really the ideal opponent for Dortmund in many ways. You know, Dortmund have looked best this season in the Super Cup against Bayern and now at home against Leverkusen, against teams who love possession, who don't mind attacking, and who Dortmund can just wait a little and punish on a break. Favre is a little bit unique in among the German top coaches. He is Swiss, but German-based top coaches, in the sense that he doesn't really play a pressing game. Dortmund usually wait for things to fall apart, and then they go very, very quick. So if Barcelona are not, you know, at their very best and are much sharper, so in possession, the sort of things that have been lost a little bit maybe over the last year or so at Barca, I think Dortmund would be very dangerous for them.
The thing is that there are two Barcelonas at the minute, one at home, one away from home, and they are totally different. I want to see what kind of Barcelona we find on Tuesday in Signal Iduna Park. But at the same time, after what I saw on Saturday, I think that Barcelona is ready, finally, to play a game of this caliber. I think that 2 weeks ago they weren't, but finally something is clicking there. And in this kind of groups, in which there is a team which is clearly worse than the rest, let's remember, it's Dortmund, Barcelona, Inter Milan and Slavia Praga, getting 6 points against Slavia Praga is crucial, to the point that I remember Atletico de Madrid being knocked out from Champions League in a group with Chelsea and Roma for not being able to beat Karabakh. And last season, Valencia went out of Champions League in the Manchester United and Juventus group because they weren't able to beat Young Boys in both games. So I think that there is a bit of pressure for every club, for Inter, for Barcelona, for Borussia Dortmund as well. They better do it well at home, but especially they better do the job against Slavia Praga.
All right, Inter who are facing Slavia Praga this time around, coming off a 1-0 win over 10-man Udinese. Quite a laboured victory, but still, as you mentioned before, James, a perfect record. There are one or two doubts about, I think, Lukaku, whether he's going to be fit to play. Inter, who didn't actually get out of the group last time in the Champions League, but they look strong this time.
Yeah, I mean, a year ago they did have two match points. It was in their hands, essentially, to qualify, and they bottled it. You look at that final matchday result where Spurs only drew at Barcelona. If Inter do the business at home against PSV, they go through, and they didn't. But you're right to bring up Lukaku. I don't think it's necessarily fitness-based. I think it's because he was actually very poor on Saturday night against Udinese. He seemed to react rather than anticipate the balls that were coming to him. So he was very easy to defend. He was taken off. And it was, as you say, quite a unconvincing Inter performance. Nicola Barella, another one of their big signings, he went off at half-time. He hasn't really settled. The player to watch, though, and I think he's been the best player in Serie A so far this season, is Stefano Sensi. I can't remember a midfielder making an impact like this at Inter since Wesley Schneider. Instant impact, decisive in every game, smallest kid on the pitch, and he scores the winner, a near-post header from a Diego Godin ball into the box. It was also quite curious to see what Conte was doing with the team. He, instead of playing 3-5-2, played 3-4-3 with Sensi and Politano just off Lukaku. Saying that, you know, they're going to have to find different solutions over the course of the season. They don't want to be predictable. And playing someone like Sensi, who I think is a bit of a hybrid between Ferrati and Schneider. You know, he can be that guy who plays lots of passes in midfield, but also can score goals, as we're seeing. And Politano, who's a winger who can beat players, score from outside the box. They've got solutions. I think we'll probably see in this game them go back to Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez up front. I think D'Ambrosio will come back in for Diego Godin at the back. And I think we'll probably see Vecino instead of Barella.
Okay, it is against Slavia Prague, so I'm going to move on.
There is one thing to pick up on from Inter, which was Conte, for the first time, having a pop at Maurizio Sarri.
Ah, yes,
Juventus.
Because Juventus' disappointing draw at Fiorentina, Sarri doing what he did at Napoli and Empoli, making excuses, saying it was 3 o'clock kickoff. It was really hot. Conte basically saying, chill out, man. You're with the best now.
Yeah. Valencia, who were hammered 5-2 As bad as the Gary Neville days, I think that result's been called by the local press. Next up, face Chelsea in the Champions League. Alvaro,
yes.
It's a great time to be facing Los Che.
It is a good time. Valencia and Chelsea played a battery of games, six games in 4 years, from 2007 to 2011. Valencia never managed to beat Chelsea. And I don't think that this time is a good time for Valencia to play against them, because Marcelino was sacked on the 11th of September as a result of how much ranting against the owner he did, because it wasn't something based purely on results. I mean, basically, Marcelino wanted to sign Rafinha, he wanted to sign Denis Suarez, and he wanted to keep Rodrigo in the team this summer. And Peter Lim had other plans. He didn't sign Rafinha, he didn't sign Denis Suarez, and he couldn't sell Rodrigo, even though he tried to sell him, but Atletico couldn't find the money to sign the player. Therefore, the relationship between them was totally broken, between the owner, Peter Lim, Marcelino, the coach, and also the sporting director, Matteo Alemany, who still remains there, and he was a big advocate of Marcelino, but unfortunately he cannot leave the club, because if he leaves, he will have to pay 3 million if he leaves Valencia, Matteo Alemany. So now they've got a new manager, Albert Celades, who is not very clear if he's got the support of the locker room, because the likes of Parejo and the likes of Garay, important figures in the team, have shown endorsement and support for Marcelino on his departure in social media.
Wow, so a real mess then.
It is a mess, yeah. However, the good thing for Valencia is that if they look at the big picture, they've got a very similar squad to what they had last year. They haven't lost any key player, and they ended up the season winning the Spanish Cup, which, according to Marcelino, was the catalyst for him to be sacked.
Right.
Because Valencia owner Peter Lim never congratulated Marcelino for winning the Spanish Cup. He congratulated Marcelino 2 months later for having qualified for Champions League.
Okay.
Which tells you there that... obviously, Peter Lim is more money-driven than title-driven, considering that Valencia, winning the Spanish Cup in May 2019, were winning their first title in 11 years.
Incredible. So Lim was more upset that he'd committed resources to a cup run that he wasn't interested in, rather than Champions League qualification.
Yes, in fact, there are reports that Marcelino was advised not to try to go very strong on the cup. I mean, just to leave it and focus on the Champions League qualifying campaign. So he managed to qualify Valencia for Champions League, and he managed to win the Spanish Cup. But the relationship between them both was already broken from probably the moment Valencia won the Spanish Cup, and Marcelino was never congratulated for that.
Okay. Their prospects at Stamford Bridge?
I think that Chelsea must be the favourite for this game. But it's funny, because they are two totally different teams. I mean, if you see Chelsea, they are capable of scoring many, many, many goals, and they've got this youth up front. And Valencia is rather an Italian team in the most stereotypical sort of way. So they defend really well. And I can imagine Valencia defending themselves and counter-attacking, and Chelsea going for it.
A bit like the trip to Old Trafford last year.
Yes, that was a 0-0.
Yeah.
And I would say that the game is going to be, in the tactical parameters, will be very similar to what happened in Old Trafford last season.
The other two teams in that group are Ajax and Lille. Lille, who finished second in Ligue 1 last year, and beat Angers the weekend 2-1, Jules, as you know, with their prospects away in Amsterdam. Ajax looking very good, despite the sale of so many big players.
Yes, looking very good. They're cruising in the league. They're top with PSV, although they have a few doubtful players. I think Van de Beek and Mazraoui might not be fit enough to play. But for Lille, it's no pressure. You know, it was an incredible season last year. They lost most of their best players, including Thiago Mendes, who went to Lyon, and Nicolas Pepe, obviously, who went to Arsenal, which was always planned, and used the business plan, as we mentioned a lot on the show, sell those players and then buy some younger ones and give them a platform to shine, etc. And they've done that. Some of the players that they bought in the summer, especially the striker Osimhen, the Nigerian international, looked already very strong and looked like the next one to go at some point soon. But this will be a great experience for what is a quite young team with a bit of experience there and there. But they have nothing to lose, so I think they will go for it. And they see as a quite an open group, especially with Valencia in trouble, Chelsea, you're not really sure, and Ajax being the big favourite of that group. But they will go for it, for sure.
Next up, the European champions.
At Paddy Power, we wanted to do something to make Mondays a bit less Monday. So now Mondays are Money Back Mondays, when we get you, the punters, to nominate your lost football bet on Twitter using the hashtag Money Back Mondays, to vote in our Monday Twitter poll, and then we refund on the most popular market as a free bet. Money Back Mondays, because sometimes even Pep has an off day. Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special. T's and C's apply. No max stake. Refund will be as a free bet. Does not apply to shop bets. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
on Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
European champions in action Tuesday in Naples. James, Liverpool, the European champions, but of course, they so nearly came a cropper at home to Napoli. No, had that Alisson, was it on Milik, that save right at the death? Yeah.
Mm.
Literally, yeah. Last minute.
Could have been Napoli going through. Anfield. No?
Yeah, goal difference.
Yeah.
And remember the game at the San Paolo last year, Napoli won that game.
1-0.
And they played really well. It didn't seem that Liverpool had many answers for the system that Ancelotti came up with, which was kind of a bit of a hybrid, with Maximovic is usually a centre-back playing as a right-back, and then they'd put the left-back bombing on and then go to a back three. And they never really got to grips with it. And you have to say, Napoli were unlucky not to get out of the group last year because they outplayed PSG at the Parc des Princes, and PSG, was it Di Maria at the end, got them a quite lucky equaliser.
Oh,
moment of individual brilliance. Now, come on, Jules. But Napoli, impressive at the weekend. In 2-0 win against Sampdoria.
A clean sheet at last.
A clean sheet, although they had their goalkeeper to thank, Alex Meret, who made two really good saves, one particular from Rigoni. And even in the 4-3 loss to Juventus, he was really impressive in that game. So Manolas didn't play in this game, but Koulibaly did. I expect the Greek to come back next to him. They've got a really quick defence, which they're going to need, I would say, against Liverpool. They've got a really good midfield, Napoli, with Fabian and Elmas, the kid that they've signed from Fenerbahce, and Zielinski. I think the issue at the moment is balance, because as we saw against Juventus and Fiorentina in particular, they're very good at going forward. But when they lose the ball and teams transition on them, they tend to have some problems.
How are the dressing room looking?
The dressing rooms have been touched up.
Good.
They do look like proper dressing rooms after last week.
In fact, the San Paolo in general, I mean, you still have massive issues there with the running track, but it does look better.
Yeah, because there was the student games was held there over the summer, so they renovated it. So you've got all these nice new blue, white, yellow seats. Mm.
The running track
is blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, finally some decent dressing rooms where, you know, if you need to blow dry your hair, you can blow dry your hair.
Fantastic. The other two teams in the group are Salzburg and Genk. So you fancy perhaps both Napoli and Liverpool to go through, but what do you think about this game? No, Rafa?
Well, you fancy them, of course, but Salzburg have a chance. You know, it's their first time in the Champions League after many, many times of asking, but they're a really decent side with Jesse Marsh and a lot of really interesting young players coming through.
Erling Haaland, the Norwegian striker.
Yeah, who's at it again this weekend.
Yeah, he's 19. He looks incredible.
11 goals in 7 games.
It is the Austrian league. Mm. And
we've seen a lot of players in that league moving to Germany, either to RB Leipzig or somewhere else, and smashing it there too. So
he scored 9 in one game at the Under-20 World Cup in the summer.
Madness. It was against Honduras, but still 9 goals in a game. What's going to happen? Are Napoli going to get a win again against Liverpool, who didn't get a single win in the group stage on the road last season?
I think this game maybe comes a little bit too early for them.
Right. Jules?
I fancy Napoli to win.
Do you?
Yeah.
Raf?
I don't think Liverpool will get beaten. They haven't lost many games in 2019. I think it's only 2. So
I think we'll have another 4-3, given Napoli have played 2 4-3s out of 3 games so far.
Right.
I think that Napoli's way, it's can be very dangerous for Liverpool. And in fact, in pre-season, and I know that it was pre-season, Napoli beat Liverpool 3-0. Mm. And few players were missing in Liverpool, but still, what Napoli does and their transitions can be very harmful for Liverpool, yes.
Okay, I think Napoli's defence, which has been looking a bit rocky so far, is going to have
which
a rough
surprise
night.
Surprise, because everyone was looking at the summer and saying they've really strengthened at the back. They've not only got the best defender in the league, but they've got Manolas now. Mm. And I tell you who to look out for as well is Di Lorenzo, the right back.
Lovely assist for the first Mertens goal.
Who is the new Torricelli.
Right, nice.
Yeah, nice.
Isn't Liverpool's defence more rocky at the moment?
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
I'm still not getting that, Rafa. Why Rocky?
Adrian.
Ah, okay. Yes, right. Brilliant. Okay. All right. Let's move on to Wednesday's games. Now, Paris Saint-Germain are hosting Real Madrid on Wednesday. Saturday, Neymar came back and this was the reaction. And then this was the reaction in the 92nd minute when, with the score 0-0, against Strasbourg, the Brazilian pulled out a quite ridiculous overhead kick.
Centre de Diallo pour Neymar! La saison 3 de Neymar a définitivement commencé. Neymar vient de rallumer le Parc des Princes.
Jules, what a return!
Incredible. Just an incredible new chapter in what is already an incredible story. The club tried everything they could to keep the fans calm, especially the ultras. And what did they do? They booed him literally every single touch. They booed his name. They insulted him and his father. They had banners. They had the whole lot. And Neymar
was Icardi like? Was Icardi like, I'm used to this. It's fine. You'll get
Wanda
it over.
Wanda was in the box as well. Wanda was there in the box. And she probably said, yeah, we all know that. You know, we're used to it. But Neymar was pretty anonymous for most of the game, to be fair, until that 92nd minute where the balls come from the left-hand side and he tries that overhead kick on his left foot. And the ball goes in. I mean, only him, it's a genius of a goal. And the same fans who've been booing him like literally a minute before, the stadium erupted completely. And there's a long way to go. And it's the first game and he hadn't played for a very long time. And, you know, the summer is still very much there. But if he keeps doing things like that, at some point they will welcome him back.
He can't play, though, this midweek because he's still serving that Instagram ban.
Instagram ban, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he criticised the match officials.
After the United game, yeah, right, the second leg for the penalty they gave on Kimpembe. So 3-match ban soon. Right. The first three games, he's out of the picture.
So you've got Mbappe out, Cavani's injured. Icardi, is he fit to start? He only had a brief appearance, no, against Strasbourg.
Yeah, and Cavani is fit again. So Cavani,
oh, he is?
Yes, he'd be either Choupo-Moting, and let's not laugh here, or Mauro Icardi as a first out, which would be quite spectacular for him to start against Real Madrid, or bring back Cavani if he's definitely 100% fit and there's no risk for him to play again. But Icardi has obviously brought new options for Tuchel. And talking about Icardi, do you remember last week we said how the whole of Paris and France, we watched Tiki-Taka on Italian television to see what Wanda had to say.
Yeah.
And last night, on Sunday night, she revealed that the game was on Saturday for Icardi to make his debut. And then on Sunday, he had a few friends over and they spent the whole afternoon on scooters, electric scooters in Paris, which were quite popular in Paris, going all around the city. I'm not sure if he was wearing a helmet. I doubt very much it. I'm not sure if Tuchel and the PSG hierarchy were very chuffed to know that Mauro Icardi spent a few hours on a trottinette, as we call them in French, on an electric scooter to go around Paris. But I think Wanda is going to reveal a few things which is going to make it even more interesting.
She also said Napoli didn't spend the money that they basically put aside for Icardi. So it's still there. It's still there.
Yes,
you know, in January,
already.
There might be a surprise.
Yeah.
Which was that.
Jules, are you worried about this clash with Real Madrid?
Not really. I don't think Real Madrid look in great shape either. Sergio Ramos is suspended. Militao will play as centre-back because Nacho is also suspended.
Marcelo is not playing either.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I just think both had, in their own ways, quite a tough start of the season. So
right.
It's not like if you were facing a Real Madrid team firing, and I think PSG have a chance.
Okay, Real Madrid played some of their best football of the season this weekend against Levante, but still only ended up with a narrow 3-2 win.
Yeah, that's true, because they did very well in the first half and they managed to control the game. Their possession and their pressure to get the ball back was quite astonishing. I mean, as good as it was in Rome last season against AS Roma under Julen Lopetegui, which was probably the best game of Real Madrid last season. That was really good. But they didn't know how to control the game after they got the 3-0 advantage. And then Levante, which is a good team, and lately they have managed to get some good results at Santiago Bernabeu, almost came back. Karim Benzema scored the brace, which was very good because he's proving again that the older he gets, the better he gets as well.
He's for him now this season.
No, the last season he was the best player for Real Madrid, and this season he's still the best. And I want to see how Eden Hazard adapts, because the other day he finally got 20 minutes and he looked sharp. He was about to score a very beautiful individual solo goal that the goalkeeper stopped finally. And I think that he could start against PSG, Eden Hazard. And then there is another player who was never a signing, but he is in practical terms a signing, who is James Rodriguez after 2 years at Bayern. And the other day he played as a midfielder in Real Madrid and was very surprised with his ability and his capacity to fight, because I didn't know that version of James Rodriguez. I knew that he was, and we all know that he's very technical, technical, but I think that he understood that if he wants to play for Zidane again, he has to fight more. And there were some injuries at Real Madrid, especially in midfield. James Rodriguez got the chance, and I think that he got a very good mark in the game against Levante. And then I found it quite funny, even petulant, I would say, from Zinedine Zidane, that in the press conference after the game, he was complaining about not having enough midfielders. Hmm. Well, Zinedine Zidane never stopped Ceballos moving to Arsenal. He always went from Pogba, and that was his first option and only option. But Real Madrid had some other midfielders that could have signed, the likes of Christian Eriksen, and they haven't done it yet because Zidane just wanted Pogba. So he cannot complain about not having midfielders because he let Ceballos go and he let Marcos Llorente go to Atletico de Madrid.
Happening simultaneously with that game is the almost equally intriguing Club Bruges Galatasaray, is it? Galatasaray Club Bruges?
You mock James. But
I'm not mocking him.
I mean,
saying
this Galatasaray team.
Yep.
I mean, Falcao. Yep. Ryan Babel.
Yep.
Jean-Michel Seri. Steven Nzonzi.
What?
Yuto Nagatomo. Emre Moore. I mean,
this is like one of, you know, at the end of the transfer market when they say these players, you know, all available on a free could still be picked up.
Yeah.
But they've actually done it, and that's their team in the Champions League. That's fantastic.
Love it.
Looking forward to seeing that one.
The thing is that those players are not finished. Emre Moore is 21, 22 years old. Yeah. And the rest of the guys you mentioned, they are young. Or at least they are not. They are not really old. This is not the end of their career.
Ryan Babel is old, but still does it. We saw what he did for the Dutch against the Germans.
And Falcao as well, who scored, by the way, in his debut of the weekend.
Did he?
Falcao, yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so yeah, Galatasaray Club Bruges for your considerations. Let's move on anyway. Wednesday, see Spurs at Olympiacos. Spurs fresh from a 4-0 win against Palace. Last season's Champions League runners-up, of course, but taking on an Olympiacos side that's had a dream start to their season. 9 games between league and Champions League preliminaries, 8 victories, 1 draw, no defeats, 20 goals scored, and only 1 conceded. Now, given Olympiacos' history with English sides, they've beaten them in 5 of their 6 visits. We dialed up the Olympiacos manager, Pedro Martins, to ask if there's more of that in store for Spurs. Pedro, what would you say is the reason for Olympiacos' incredible start to the season?
First of all, last year we built a new team. And now, after 1 year, is the same team. So we keep going and continue with the same roster, 80% of the squad. And of course, we buy players with quality, like Semedo, like Balbuena. It comes a big quality for our roster. But most important, that's what we built last year. Now we are in the Champions League. And it's very important for the club. It's very important for the players. And also for the Greek football, because we need it.
How about for you, Pedro? Because I know you had Europa League with Guimaraes previously, but how excited are you to have your first Champions League group stage game on Wednesday?
It's exciting, of course. It's a challenger for us also. It's my first time, and also for many players it's the first time. So this is a big challenger. And we know we have difficult games against Tottenham, against Red Star and Bayern. But we want to play these games. This is a big level, and we have players. They must to show to everybody this level.
Have you seen Spurs play much this year? And what is the thing that concerns you most about them? What do you think will be key in this match?
I saw against City. I saw the last game they play against Crystal Palace. Against Newcastle. So I follow and see several games. And, you know, Tottenham in the last 3-4 years is the same roster also. Big quality, top striker like Kane and... big mobility in the front, in the attack, strong midfielders. They're fighting for the championship in the best football in the world. And last year was the finalist in the Champions League. So we see a difficult game, strong points of the opponent. But like I'm telling all the time, we have also our chances. And we play at home in Karaskak. It's not easy for the opponents play in our stadium. So I think most important, I think it will be a great game.
Excellent. What can you tell us, Pedro, about the atmosphere there in Piraeus ahead of the
amazing,
match?
It's amazing. We have just 34,000, but you know, the same noise, the same crowd like we have. You have the 15 people in the stadium, so it's unbelievable the way the Olympiacos fans support our team. And since the beginning, the atmosphere is amazing. We sold all the tickets for the all the season very soon in July. And these moments, they are incredible for our fans, for Piraeus. You know, it's unbelievable how they feel and how they love so with so passion this club.
Pedro, that's fantastic. One last question. It's amazing the record that Olympiacos has at home to English clubs. I think 5 wins out of 6 visits from Premier League sides. Would you be happy with a draw on Wednesday, or would you regard that as 2 points dropped?
First of all, Tottenham is a big club, top players with a fantastic coach. But in our mind, always when we start and feel, is always the optimist. So in my mind, we are fighting for win the game. After we see if the draw is good or not. But in our mind, of course, with so many difficulties because the opponent is so strong. But in my mind, all the time, we try to win the game, of course.
Well, it should be an amazing atmosphere at the Kariakakis Stadium. Meantime, in that group, Rafa, Bayern Munich and Red Star Belgrade, they're going to be taking each other on. Should be a good one.
It should be a good one. I mean, Red Star are very strong at home as Liverpool, Napoli and whoever.
PSG.
And PSG, of course.
PSG won there.
Found to their detriment.
Yeah. PSG won there. Yeah.
Didn't they draw?
No, they won, but Napoli and Liverpool lost.
Even so, they were very strong at home at the Maracana. Mm. The game is almost more exciting for being a replay of one of the most famous games of all time for both clubs, which was the 1991 semi-final, which, of course, Red Star Belgrade won in unbelievable fashion with one of the most strangest own goals ever scored at this level by Klaus Augenthaler in the very last minute of the second leg. To then go on and lift the trophy against Olympique Marseille.
What did he do exactly?
He tried to cut out a cross and faces the wrong way and completely slices it. And the ball kind of loops up in this big arch. And the goalkeeper, Raymond Almond, thinking, oh, this is going over, not a problem. By the time he reacts, the ball has actually already went over his head and went into the goal. 91st minute, it was 2-1 and 2-1, so it would have gone into extra time. Uh-huh. As it was, Bayern got knocked out. So until 1999, that was the most traumatic last-minute defeat in the history of Bayern Munich Football Club. So why are you laughing?
And they outdid
this
themselves.
Is not funny. This is not funny at
that
all.
That was a great Red Star Belgrade team, though. That was the greatest of all.
Well, that was the Savicevic team, yeah, Prosinecki, Panchev, Binic, Belodedic. Yeah. They had real quality. Generation. And it was a classic tussle, which, of course, came with a whole bittersweet coda of both Yugoslavia and Red Star as a team breaking up not long afterwards. The civil war actually broke out a few weeks later. So a big game in many different ways. And of course, doesn't quite have the same connotation. But I can guarantee that the moment that draw came out, everybody associated with the teams of a certain age thought immediately about that game.
If you're listening to this episode of the Totally Football Show and thinking, God, I wish I was as suave and sophisticated as those European fancy dams, Rafa, Jules and Alvaro, and I wish I could rock the Italian look as well as Jimbo and James H, well, head on over to stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix is an online personal stylist service that takes the work out of dressing well. They collaborate with all your favourite continental brands like French Connection, Just Cavalli and Tiger of Sweden, and it is super easy. All you have to do is sign up at stitchfix.com, answer a few questions about your style, your size, your shape and your budget, and then book a delivery date for your box of clothes handpicked by one of their stylists. You try everything on at home so you can mix and match your stuff with the rest of your wardrobe. You only keep what you want and send back what you don't. Delivery is free both ways. All you pay is a one-off stylist fee of £10, which is used against any of the clothes you then buy.
Try it for yourself on the Stitch Fix app or at stitchfix.com/totally. That's stitchfix.com/totally.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Listener, Premier Sports is the home of Serie A and La Liga in the UK, with 17 live games coming up this weekend. Among them, the Milan Derby on Saturday night on Premier Sports 1. And on Sunday from La Liga, top of the table Sevilla hosting Real Madrid. Premier Sports is available for just £11.99 for Sky and Premier Player customers, and also available on Virgin TV. Ooh, Alvaro, Sevilla taking on Real Madrid on Sunday night. That sounds a bit special.
Lopetegui's revenge.
It could be, in a way, yeah. But I really want to see what Sevilla is up to when they play a top team like Real Madrid.
Right.
Because so far they have had a kind of easy games. This weekend they beat Alaves, not comprehensively at all. It was an excellent free kick from Joan Jordan that made the difference in that game. And there were a few interesting things for Sevilla. Chicharito made his debut for them. He played in the second half. Lucas Ocampos, he seems to be now that player that everyone thought he was going to be at some point. And now in Sevilla, he...
I'm not sure. Let's
see. Let's see, because I don't want to be driven by the present too much.
Right? I see.
But it looks like he's playing really well. And the good thing about Sevilla is that they are really good defensively. They have conceded only one goal in La Liga. Atlético de Madrid has conceded 4 or 5, I think. Barcelona and Real Madrid, they have conceded around 7. And Sevilla has conceded only one. Right. That's why they are leading the Spanish table.
Okay, previous leaders of La Liga, Atlético Madrid, conceded 2 this weekend when they went down at the Anoeta, what used to be the Anoeta, the restyled Real Sociedad ground. What's it called now?
Real Arena.
Oh, yeah, the Real Arena.
Arena, yeah.
Very nice. Okay, Atletico Madrid, who will be on Wednesday night hosting Juventus. They beat Juve there, didn't they, last year?
They did beat Juventus 2-0.
And then when they went to Turin, Cristiano Ronaldo did for them, as he so always does. Incredible record Cristiano's got against Atleti. 22 goals in 31 matches. How?
Ronaldo, as he left the mix zone at the Wanda, where he made the gesture of five European Cups and zero to them.
Right.
Yeah, the Cristiano Ronaldo is never welcome at Wanda Metropolitano. But I would like to focus a little bit on Atletico de Madrid, because this season they seem to be the big thing, but they are not quite there yet. Defensively, they are not as good as they used to be. And every time and every season, the same pattern follows. Atletico de Madrid tries to play in a nicer way at the beginning of the season, then they realize that they can't play that way, and they go back to what they were. And Joao Felix is already suffering a little bit from the rigors of Simeone's hard work ethics. Sometimes he seems not to be yet physically up to the challenge. And the other day against Real Sociedad, they didn't lose because Real Sociedad was a defensive team more than anything like that. It's just that Real Sociedad showed more quality in midfield and up front. Edegaard was running the show for Real Sociedad, and Monreal, the former Arsenal left-back and the Norwegian player, scored for Real Sociedad. So I would say that Atletico de Madrid is in that moment of defining themselves. What do they want to be? Do they want to be the team that they were? And do they want to be the way that they gave us so many good results? Or do they want to be a different club?
Right. And Juve, their opponents, on Wednesday, also having a bit of an identity crisis under their new manager, Maurizio Sarri. Only a 0-0 for them this weekend, a 0-0 that andava stretto, that was perhaps a little bit unfair on their opponents, Fiorentina.
Oh, undoubtedly. Fiorentina deserved to win that game. They were much better. Juventus allowed 18 shots in that game. It's the worst I've seen them play in a long, long time. Even second half of last season, when Juventus decided that they needed to make a change of manager because the performances weren't up to what they thought the team was capable of. At the moment, as they say in Italian, they're né carne né pesce. They're not fish, they're not meat. They're something in between.
In English, neither fish nor flesh. What do you call it in German?
Same.
No, but how do you say it?
Weder fish nor flesh.
Oh, that's nice.
I think that is an international saying.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, right. But anyway.
Ni carne ni pescado.
But what was really surprising is that even French? When they were...
We don't have it in French.
What?
No.
Ni
Ni poisson?
Ich neither frog nor snail.
That's very nice, Rafa. Oh, he's back. He's back.
His back is bad. Right. You deserve that for taking the mick of the French. Right, have that pain.
But anyway, Juve, James.
What was surprising, James, was that even when they were poor under Allegri, they would create two or three really good chances, or there would be some bit where they would get one of their best players into a position to win the game. And in this, they didn't do that at all. It was really surprising to see how well Fiorentina did at keeping Juventus really far away from their own goal. Cristiano Ronaldo and Higuain didn't have a shot on goal until after an hour. And I think Sarri, as I mentioned earlier, complained about the heat. He complained that he had to use all of his substitutions for injuries because Douglas Costa went off after 7 minutes and he's been so important to them.
Pjanic went out for Wednesday and Pjanic as well. Yeah.
Pjanic went off before half-time. Then Danilo started cramping up. But Fiorentina caused them all problems. And it was quite surprising given how poor Fiorentina were against Genoa. And also, while they were very good for an hour against Napoli, they conceded four goals. So you expected Juventus to find holes in the back against this Fiorentina side and they didn't find anything.
James, Franck Ribéry had
How good was it?
Hold on a second. Franck Ribéry had a good game, by all accounts. I'm a bit worried, though. He is 35. Is that not too young for Serie A?
And then the heat as well.
It would have been great if Buffon was playing instead of Szczesny, where you'd have the 42-year-old. But you had Rocco Commisso, the new Fiorentina owner, came out afterwards and said, you know, Franck Ribéry is about to turn 36, and he was, and Ronaldo's younger, and he was better than Ronaldo. He was brilliant. First start, set up a couple of chances which Fiorentina should have scored from, particularly Dalbert. And the one thing that the Italians picked up on after, so Italian this was.
When he sprinted back.
When he sprinted back and tracked back and stopped Ronaldo on the counter-attack after an hour. That really stood out for them.
We've started calling him FR7.
Very nice. Quick mention for Bayer Leverkusen, Lokomotiv. Rafa, anything we should know about that game?
The game itself, maybe not so much, but Peter Bosz, I think, would be interesting to take his very gung-ho approach to the Champions League. When it works, it's beautiful, but it does leave gaps, as we saw on Saturday. And it'd be great to see if, you know, the likes of Kai Havertz, for example, can replicate some of the form that they've shown in the league last year at the biggest stage.
Okay, Shakhtar are hosting Manchester City again. We think of this as a tricky trip for Man City, but they did win 3-0 there in their last campaign. Although Shakhtar are in great form right now. They've had seven straight wins.
Scoring lots of goals as well. Yeah. A lot of excitement around this 19-year-old Brazilian forward that they've got called Tete.
Yeah, who plays on the right hand side. It's the same. I mean, Tyson is there.
Junior Moraes.
Yeah, Junior Moraes. So it's the same core of players, but they keep finding those young, very talented Brazilians, bringing them over. And I mean, Stepanenko is there in midfield, so you've got a lot of experience as well, plus the Brazilian touch, and they've done really well in group stages before. It's just City last season were far too strong.
Also, new manager, because Paulo Fonseca's gone to Roma.
Luis Castro.
Yeah.
Yeah. So City arriving fresh from this shock defeat away at Norwich, and with real question marks at the back, with Laporte out, and not really a satisfactory replacement. Do you see another defeat coming for City here?
It'd be interesting. And Benjamin Mendy is back in the squad. So, I mean, what could go wrong? I mean, if Benjamin Mendy plays as well with Stones and Otamendi and Kyle Walker, we're awful at the weekend. It's a really testing time, I think, for City and Guardiola. See how they can bounce back, how they can recover from a really bad defeat that would hurt far more than, you know, the first one they had last season away at Chelsea in December, for example.
I would like to disagree here. I think that Manchester City is going to run with the 15 or 18 points in this group.
Okay.
I think that the real pressure for them is Premier League, because Liverpool, they are getting 3 points, not to the infinite, but probably they will end up the season with 90 plus. So the real pressure for Manchester City is there. I think that Champions League at some point from mid-November is going to become like some sort of easy games for them.
I'd back Atalanta to Norwich them.
And we said that last season as well about City, and they struggled. You know, they were beaten by Lyon and drew only away at Lyon. They struggled in that, in a group against Hoffenheim as well, even if they went through and ended up winning some matches.
I don't know if this group is as good. That's the thing.
I know,
Atalanta.
Let's talk about Atalanta, the kind of team that you might want to like before they're cool, because they might well be the nice surprise. Do you think, James, or is that bigging them up too much of this European season?
They've got the best draw of all the Italian teams, and they were in pot four. And I think this was a real surprise for them, because speaking to the players, they wanted the kind of draw that Inter got with Barcelona and Dortmund, because they're like, this might never happen again, so we'd love to go and play in these great grounds around Europe. Instead, they've got a genuine chance of making the round of 16, I would say. And they played some wonderful football so far this season, because in contrast to other years where they've always lost two or three players, they've kept their best players this time around. And in fact, they've added. And I'm not talking about Skrtel, who left, but I'm talking about Luis Muriel. Mm. Muriel, who has become a super sub for them, scored twice to, you know, make them win in their first game when they came back from 2-0 down, to win 3-2 against Spal, and then at the weekend as well, proved big when they won away at Genoa. And Duvan Zapata as well. I mean,
is he looking like having a same season as last season?
Yeah. I mean, the goal he scored to win the game on Sunday, wow, in Genoa, 95th minute. Zapata deve girarsi, parte il destro, rete, gol incredibile di Duvan Zapata. There isn't a centre back in the world that would look at Zapata and think, I've got an easy afternoon or easy evening here. And they're never beaten. This is a team that always comes back. You know, if City were, for example, to get 2-0 up, 3-0 up at half time, they would keep coming for them, and always believe. They're the team that recovered the most points from losing positions since the last season. They've got a style of play that I think a lot of teams will find very difficult to play against.
And Papu Gomez as well.
Papu and Josip Iličić.
Mm. Marvellous. All right, well, all of them, they're going to be away at Dinamo Zagreb this Wednesday.
And given I've built them up so much, they'll probably lose.
Well, we can see.
But they've got the amazing
Dani Olmo. Spanish guy, yeah. The former Barcelona academy guy. Yeah.
Just amazing.
He's very good. And this summer he tried to leave the Croatian league. Actually, he went to Croatia very young, at the age of 16, 17, which is very unusual for a Spanish player to go to Croatia that young.
Right.
But he is playing really good for Dinamo Zagreb, and he was one of the key players in Spanish under-21 success this summer.
Okay, but that name again?
Aldo? Dani Olmo. He was really good player, James.
21 Euros.
Yeah, lots of offers.
The surprising thing about him is that he went to Dinamo Zagreb when Halilovic went the other way to Barcelona.
More or less, yeah.
More or less. And it's not often that, you know, say there's a kid in Barcelona's academy and they're like, we need a make weight to make this sweeten this deal. Okay, where am I going? Zagreb. And you wouldn't usually see someone take that. And he has. And
it is very strange as well to see a Spanish guy speaking Croatian.
Absolutely. Croatia wanted him to be part of their national team.
Yeah,
right?
They wanted to naturalise him.
Yeah. Well,
if you're curious to see how Olmo gets on, but can't bear the thought of not following the other games, the great news is that by following the goal show on Wednesday, as on Tuesday, you won't miss out on any of the key moments from this opening match day of the new Champions League season. All right. Very shortly, we'll have a quick word on what might be happening on Thursday in the Europa League and other things like that, and answering some of your questions. First of all, though, over to producer Ben.
Thanks very much, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power on the line to talk European football. Lee, let's start with Italy. Inter have won 3 out of 3. They're top of Serie A. Are you starting to believe that this could be the Nerazzurri's year?
Well, I know Antonio Conte has the Midas touch in terms of winning the title, but we're not convinced yet on Inter Milan. They remain third favourite in our betting at around 6-1. Juve are favourites, of course, odds on around 4-9, with Napoli sandwiched between the two. But Inter Milan's odds have shortened since the start of the season. They keep this up, they'll soon be second in the betting. It'll take something quite monstrous, though, for them to overhaul Juventus in the betting, let alone the actual table.
On to the Champions League, then, and the group stages kick off this week. Arguably the biggest game is PSG against Real. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, El Spendico. Not a bad first week fixture for the Champions League group stage. Welcome back, European football. And we make PSG the favourites here. They're 11-10 to get the win. They are the home team after all the Parisians. Real Madrid, meanwhile, mixed start to the season for them. They're 11-5 to win this, with the draw almost an identical price at 5-2.
And sticking with the Champions League, Lee, finally, give us a tip for the top scorer. But here's the proviso. It can't be Ronaldo and it can't be Messi.
Well, you say that, but I don't know if I put my money on them to win it. I'm just kidding. They're obviously the favourites. Sergio Aguero leads the betting aside from those two at 7-1. Or you can get Mo Salah at 10s, Raheem Sterling and Mbappe at 12-1. Lewandowski's 14-1, or Sadio Mane 16-1. I should mention Harry Kane, otherwise Spurs fans will be my timeline all week. It's 18-1, he wins the top scorer award.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops. Speaking of the fun stopping, Europa League is back on Thursday night.
Mickey Diane.
Mickey Diane.
The Europa League is back on Thursday night, yes.
When did an average player, because he's been average
he's
the last
not an average
year.
Player.
The last 3 years.
He was Bundesliga player of the year now a few years ago.
A few years, in another life he was. Come on, man. The last 3 years he's been average.
Well, I tell you what, he's not average at Roma, and nor is the song that this fan has made about him.
Mkhitaryan, arrivato l'armeno che fa come treno, è Mkhitaryan.
Grande.
Ho trovato la pasta al terzino, lo spasta, è Mkhitaryan. È venuto da Londra, la Lazio, la sponda, è Mkhitaryan.
A grande.
Mkhitaryan.
Did that come after Mkhitaryan scored on his first start this weekend?
No, it came during the international break.
Right.
And Mkhitaryan, he whipped Roma fans into a frenzy because
this is just
he played really well against Italy, and then he played really well against Dzeko's Bosnia, where he scored twice.
Two,
and so and all they're like, this guy is a phenomenon.
A grande.
A grande. Scores on his debut.
Give them a bit of time.
Right. And it was a fantastic result that for Roma. 21 minutes, 4 goals. Dzeko on the score sheet, as was he. The opening goal was by
Cristante.
And then, extraordinarily, Justin Cliver also got on the score sheet. So
what happened to him? Sense.
Well, he's there at Roma and hasn't so far really.
Well, about last season. It was a very difficult season for a new player to come into that club.
Anyway, Roma on Thursday night in Europa League action as they take on Başakşehir. Lazio, their neighbours, will be away at Cluj. Celtic are going to be at Rennes. Rangers host Feyenoord, PSV are up against Sporting Lisbon, Arsenal are Eintracht Frankfurt, Wolves take on Braga, and Man United have Astana. This is just one of two of the reams of Europa League action. There are some good games, actually. Let's just tell you, Rafa, Eintracht Frankfurt, who celebrated reaching the semi-finals last year by selling off anyone who's ever scored a goal for them, how are they looking for this visit of the Gunners?
They didn't have a good weekend. They lost 2-1 at Augsburg, one of the poorest sides in the league. They didn't play all that badly in the second half, but they sort of missed the boat, as it were, in the first. They conceded quite early. Then there's a wonder goal from Niederlechner to make it 2. Pacienza, who's now emerging as the new main striker for them alongside Bas Dost, got one back. But ultimately, they weren't quite good enough.
Does he rush his chances?
No, James, he doesn't. They're still a formidable side, especially with Kostic playing really well. They knocked out Strasbourg in a game that showed you, I think, the power of the crowd. It was the stadium that won the game for them. And I think there are very few stadiums in Europa League which will be as important for the team's chances as this one is. So especially if the suggestions are true that Emery might mix it up again and play the youngsters, I think they might be in for a tricky evening.
And we saw against Strasbourg as well the power of the fans on the referee, because there was a red card in each team, but the crowd put so much pressure on that the referee at some point, I think, like, got some sort of influence though or something.
Arsenal used to playing at a cauldron though, surely. Celtic away at Rennes, what kind of evening awaits them there?
Again, the atmosphere would be, there would be half of, it's only a 30,000 city stadium in Rennes, not like the 60,000 in Frankfurt, but the crowd are very, very good in Rennes as well, and they had that wonderful run in the Europa League last year where they lost to Arsenal in the last 16 after beating them at home. So it would be, they have good momentum going into the game. They have a good squad. They lost some key players like Atem Benarfa, for example, but it's a very interesting team with a very young, bright manager as well in Julien Stéphan. So this should be a really good game for Celtic.
Rennes currently second in Ligue 1. Rangers hosting final where Jaap Stam is the manager. So it's Steven Gerrard against Jaap Stam. Did you see what Zlatan Ibrahimovic did this weekend?
Yes. Did you see what he said as well? Did you
know what he said? Okay, so first of all, this is what he did. LA Galaxy taking on Sporting Kansas City. Zlat gets a Zlat trick, essentially, in a 7-2 Galaxy win. And he's now got the record for most goals in a single season. Oh, no, it's a club record. But still, 26 goals. That's insane.
So then he comes out and says, I'm the greatest player ever to have played in MLS. Obviously.
Well,
is he wrong?
That's a good debate.
Jovinko, come on. Jovinko
has to be the best.
The Atomic Ant.
Yes.
Imagine putting them two together in an all-star team.
That would be extraordinary. Amazing. Let's make it happen. Very good. MLS, always fun and heading towards the business end of their season. Let's have a look at one or two questions from you, lovely listener. Here's one about Serie A, James. Tom Russell asks, are Bologna the anti-Inter? Lovely question. Tell us about Bologna this weekend.
Well, Bologna were 2-0 down in Brescia. Then they were 3-1 down. And then Brescia got a man sent off. But Bologna came back and they won 4-3. And they are, second with Juventus on 7 points. But the great story about this was as soon as the bus returned to Bologna, they made a detour. They didn't go to the training ground so they could all get in their cars and go home. They went straight to the hospital where Siniša Mihajlović is undergoing his second round of chemotherapy. And
by all accounts, he directed the game by phone from his hospital bed.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the story that was put out.
Well, no, Rodrigo Palacio at full time came out and said that he was incazzato at half time.
Very upset.
Very upset.
Yeah.
Which you can imagine. I mean, you just send lots of WhatsApp audios for your assistants to just play like that, and there you go. You've got your halftime team talk. But they were underneath Sinisa's hospital window and singing, and he was like, I wasn't expecting you. And then he said, let's talk on Tuesday. We haven't done anything yet. So I think this Bologna side very much showing the spirit of Mihajlović. It is extraordinary that there's a team in Serie A doing this well, whose manager is, as ill as he is, isn't able to take training. It was a big surprise, remember, on match day one that he showed up and was on the sidelines. And yet they've managed to pick up exactly where they left off second half of last season, where, let's not forget, it was a miracle that he kept them up given the situation he inherited from Pippo Inzaghi, a team that never scored goals, was almost in Serie B, and they finished top half of the table. They scored goals for fun, and they're a really exciting team to watch.
Rafa Andrew wants to know, what is Dortmund's plan for next season when they get 100 million plus for Sancho? Continue to buy young talent who will increase in value or start competing with Bayern for elite experienced players? And will Favre still be there to lead the new side? What is the plan with Sancho? Is he there for one more year and then heading back?
I think that the plan is to sell him in the summer. That's always, I think, been the long-term vision, if you will. That is not to say that the player and the club might find, things are working out. Let's stay for another season. But I think with the Euros coming up, with his position in England growing as far as starting 11 is concerned, I think there is a realization at Dortmund that he probably will return if the right money is being paid. Now, what they're planning to do with the money, I don't know, because if I did, I would advise other clubs to buy the next Sancho and be smarter than Michael Zorc. But I'm sure that they already have one or two very interesting players lined up. They were after Callum Hudson-Odoi before Bayern got really interested, incidentally. So the English market continues to be one that they're trying to mine extensively.
All right. Well, one last thing then to touch on. Just to reference the Derby de la Méditerranée. Is that how you say that, then, Jules?
It is indeed, yeah.
Monaco-Marseille to its friends, which was a pretty spectacular affair. What was it, 4-3?
In the end, 4-3 for Marseille. You were at Monaco after being 2-0 down with some Ben Yedder, scored two goals to take Monaco 2-0 up. Monaco, who were second from bottom before kickoff, so really hard to win, especially against the bitter rivals. And Marseille doing really, really well under Villas-Boas. I have to say, I was really impressed with their performance last night. The way they played, the movement, the way they played on possession as well was really good. And Pipa Benedetto, the Argentine striker who signed from Boca Junior in the summer, where people had a few question marks over, scored two more goals with Payet, reborn Payet as well in that game. It was really impressive, I thought, for Marseille. And it's looking good for them for this season, especially as they don't have any European Cup to play in, so they can only focus on the league, which is not the case, obviously, of teams like Lyon and Lille and PSG.
Currently lying in fourth place, level on points with Nantes and Rennes, and only 2 points behind leaders Paris Saint-Germain. Very interesting. Okay, well, it's been a busy European edition of the Totally Football Show today. Hope you've enjoyed it, listener, and I hope you enjoy the midweek action. Many thanks for now to Julien Laurent, James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein and Alvaro Romeo. Who will be joining us again next week. Hopefully you will be too. Listener, for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.